listener, and welcome to episode 75 of Good Copy, Bad Copy, the B2B copywriting podcast. This month, we're talking about AI. When will the robots come for B2B copywriters and take all our jobs? Or is there a way we can live in peace and harmony with our shiny metal overlords? My name's David Maguire, and until such time as a computer renders me obsolete, I'm creative director at Radix Communications. I'm joined as ever by our CEO, Fiona Campbell-Howes.
Also still here. Hello.
Good to know.
But for how much longer?
Well, this is what we're talking about.
Exactly.
How's your summer going?
Well, it's going all right because this is my last week before holidays. So it's all good.
On the final countdown.
On the final countdown, exactly. Yes.
Absolutely.
How about yours?
Yeah, pretty well. Thank you very much. I've, got a few days leave coming up and just looking forward to that. The weather's been a bit all or nothing, which is weird, but then it's almost like there's something wrong with the climate.
Yes, and also the fact that we live in Cornwall and you never know what it's going to be like from one moment to the next.
Well, this is absolutely true. So we're talking about AI this month, and to help us work out if and when we need new jobs, we've spoken with Andrew Bredenkamp, who's founder and CEO of Acrolynx. That's a content governance solution for enterprises. Apparently, basically, it's an AI that tells you whether or not your writing is on point. If you have any questions, comments, or frightening predictions about the future, do let us know. You can email us at podcast@radix-communications.com or tweet us at radixcom. That's RADIXCOM. We've been hearing for years how AI is soon going to replace human copywriters like us, and companies like Phrasy claim their AI-written email subject lines can outperform us in 9 out of 10 cases. So when I caught up with Andrew Bredenkamp from Acrolynx, I just had to start by asking him how soon I need to be looking for a new job.
I don't think anytime soon. Most of the organizations we work with, which are tend to be the larger organizations in the market, are expanding. They are there is an insatiable demand for content. So I don't think content writing as a human activity is going away anytime soon. There are, as with anything else, parts of the writing process that are very repetitive and fairly don't require a very sophisticated process. And I think in those situations, we're looking at automating some of those. And so it's really a collaborative, I think, as in many fields, AI will not be replacing people. It will be taking away the grunt work, taking away the boring, repetitive tasks, and leaving the humans to do the higher end thinking and creative pieces of it. Of course, machines are already creating content; they're already writing content, but only under fairly simple. In fairly simple use cases, for example, taking company reports and company results and turning them into flowing text, sports reports and things like that. And they can do some incredible things. In the B2C domain, there are some really good content generation engines to help with product descriptions, short product descriptions based on a simple table of data, colors and sizes, etc. So there are use cases where content can be created automatically, but the days where a machine can be funny or relevant or interesting, fresh, those days are quite a way away.
I am somewhat relieved to hear that, you might gather. So were you talking about kind of using AI to sort of help and support writers? Is that more the approach that you're taking at Acrolynx instead of kind of the automated content creation?
Yeah, so we tend to think less of the individual person creating content and take a more organizational view of it. So as I say, we tend to work with large organizations where there's a team of people creating content. many of whom aren't in fact writers. They wouldn't call themselves writers. They may be subject matter experts, or they may be doing some other activity, but part of what they do involves writing. And so the process is rather different. We do look to support those people who don't consider themselves writers, to help them be better writers. And typically then we're increasing the pool of people who can create customer facing content, which is, you know, obviously good in meeting this insatiable demand for content. At the same time, the writers then move into more of a consultative mentoring role in that content creation process. But a big part of what we do is actually helping the teams work together by providing scoring, automatic scoring for the content. We're able to help guide writers and content contributors as they work on content. But we're also able to say, for a copy editor, for example, to be able to say which pieces of content should they really worry about? Where are the parts of a longer piece of content that they really need to look at? And it's really thinking of it in terms of a process where you have perhaps an approval chain of 3 or 4 or 5, or perhaps in some cases we've seen even 20 people involved in getting a piece of content ready to publish. In that process, we can help reduce some of the friction, reduce some of the cycles of editing. And so we're helping the organization create better content faster. And that's really what we do. So helping individuals for sure, but actually it's a focus on getting the organization better at content and getting them faster at content.
Sure. So when you're talking about kind of the automatic scoring and the AI helping the, an editor to see where they need to look and things, how do you do that? I mean, a computer can't read, and, you know, and I take it that this is, you know, these are areas of quality that go beyond just, you know, is the grammar correct and things like that, and kind of higher levels of writing than that.
Yeah, we're focused on the B2B market. We work with the needs of the brand. So the technology is set up. We've been doing this for almost 20 years. What we basically do is that there's a core linguistic analytics engine, which is the core of the AI. We're a spin-off from one of the world's leading AI institutes, where I led the team that built this original technology. The engine is able to analyze content for a whole set of different different insights, different goals. So it can look at obviously spelling and grammar, but also the standard kind of style things you would have, style guidelines, style rules that you would have. But it goes further to look at how conversational your style is, how lively it is, how clear it is. It'll also measure standard things like, Flesch Kincaid reading ease and those kind of things. Mm-hmm. In addition to that, we're adding, you know, other kinds of insights around the emotional signature of the content and a whole bunch of other things. So the engine is able to analyze a whole range of different linguistic characteristics of a piece of content. And what it then does is it scores those against what you have said, what the organization have said is the goal, is the strategy for that particular piece of content. So obviously, depending on the piece of content, the type of content that it is, the type of audience that it has, the engine will weight the different characteristics differently and will come up with a score. So our goal in delivering this score is to match a human judgment. So typically, you know, when the engine says a piece of content is good, a person would also agree that that piece of content is good. And so we go through a calibration phase where we make sure that the goals that you have are aligned with what a person would also say when they look at that piece of content. Once you have that, then you can rely on the scoring to say, you know, is this good enough or not? Is it ready to move through the process?
Wow. And the variables that you use, you know, for that algorithm, for the scoring, are they a closely guarded secret? Because, I mean, something like Flesch Kincaid is pretty simple. It's kind of number of syllables and number of words in a a sentence and that kind of thing. But the kind of emotional weight and things that you're talking about.
So some of them are based on published science, which are kind of out in the public domain. But as I say, we've been doing this for 20 years. So there's a lot of our own proprietary experience and expertise in the technology. And the interesting part is really how, as you say, how you as a brand or as an organization can think about how you want your content to be. Typically, people talk about clarity and they always assume everything should be as clear as possible. But of course, for different types of content, a blog article is clearly going to be much clearer than a technical white paper. Mm-hmm. And so the question is, what's the right level of clarity for a particular piece of content and for a particular audience? It's not as simple as just turning everything up to 11 and hoping for the best.
So you've got that sort of where a writer would view they would write in a consistent voice, but in a tone that is appropriate to the format and the audience and what the audience is feeling at that time. The end can kind of express that voice through a number of tones and then kind of have that flexibility as well.
So many of our customers will have personas, they'll have different audiences, they may be targeting a B2B market or a B2C market, they may be going after consumer or professional, they may be going after a technical buyer or a financial buyer. As you do that, a good copywriter will instinctively have that ability to change audience as they write. But of course, as you increase this pool of people writing, and as of course you, if you work as a copywriter and you work for different companies, the company needs to have that voice that's consistent and coherent, and that's really where we come in.
Wow! So, but by the sound of it, it's not the copywriting, you know, that a professional content writer would spend a lot of time. You know, the folks doing that you're talking about, it's more bringing everybody up to a certain level and then, you know, the humor, the nuance of it, you know, is then above and beyond that. Is that?
Well, that partly that, but even the best copywriter in the world would need to learn a brief very quickly. And occasionally if they're put into a new brief, maybe it's a one-off job that they have, you need to understand what is the key message that company has, what's the tone of voice that company has, what are the products called, what are the key differentiators called. You can't just bring that all in one go. And so we can help bring even professional copywriters to help them get aligned quickly with what the organization has as goals for a particular piece of content for a particular audience.
Sure. So, and when you are have it in that situation where, you know, a client has writers and copywriters of their own, do you get a point where either before or during, you know, where they're sort of resistant to this idea? And, you know, I'm sure you have plenty of, you know, rude copywriters like me saying, oh, a machine can't replace what I do.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen a pattern over the years that repeats itself surprisingly often, which is those people who are the most violently opposed to this even being possible as a thing are the ones who usually end up being the most vocal advocates for it, as they see how it works and how they can work with it. It's not something that works against you; it works with you. Once they understand that it's something that supports them and works together with them to get the job done, they're typically the ones who are the most passionate about sharing the benefits. Those who don't really care tend to carry on not really caring go with the flow.
Wow, I imagine that's the case. Yeah, I mean, if you're someone that cares about good writing, then anything that can help you will be something that, you know, that you'll at least consider. And so there's a phrase that I hear often, which is that a writer needs to know the rules so they can break the rules. Mm-hmm. So is there something where, you know, do the brands that you work with have like very fixed Well, no, it needs a score from the Acrylics engine of at least this, or we won't pass it. Or is it they tend to use it more in an advisory way? Or how does it actually work when it's implemented?
Yeah, so we do have some things that that you might regard as rules. I think most people regard, especially in B2B, generally in B2B communication, people regard grammar as kind of rules. But most of what we do, we call guidelines, and they are really designed to help to nudge you, if you like, in the right direction, or make you think, or make you pause. And evaluate whether what you're doing is right. There are some things like, for example, the name of the company, the name of the products of the company, things that are brought in for risk or compliance reasons, regulatory issues that are rules. And obviously, it's part of our job to highlight those and make sure they get that the content is compliant with whatever that is, brand or regulatory stuff. But generally, we're not there to say whether, you know, to evaluate, as I said, how funny something is, how fresh it is, how interesting it is to the audience. We're there to once you've decided what you want to talk about, we can help you make sure that it's appropriate for that audience, and that you know, you don't fall in love with a particular idea and wander off and end up, you know, with a 4 or 5 60 word sentences in a 60 line paragraph. We can help with the rhythm of the content. So we can, you know, it's not just all about short sentences. You want a flow, you want a mix of short sentences and long sentences to make sure there's some rhythm to it that flows. So those kinds of things we help. They're guidelines. It's not like a sentence shouldn't be more than 58, you know, 23 words or whatever. Because if you wrote in 22 word sentences one after another, you'd sound like a robot. And no one wants to read stuff written by a robot, as I think we started with. So we're there to help. We provide guidelines. We provide nudges in the right direction. And I think that's the spirit of the thing.
Sure. And the idea that it can't tell you whether it's funny or fresh or interesting. Obviously, being funny, fresh, and interesting are all, well, funny depending on context, but all good things. So, and that's where the human part, it's not that those things are not interesting or not important, it's just that that's the human bit of the equation, right?
Exactly. And I think if you're using tired old cliches or, you know, corporate speak, we will highlight that and say, you know, this might sound a bit tired to your audience. You might want to rethink it, but we're not going to write it for you.
Oh, so good. So, yes, as you say, some I don't need to head to the job centre quite yet. So that's reassuring. Andrew, thank you. That's so interesting, and you know, and it's fascinating because I think so many of us in copywriting, we hear such a lot about AI and, you know, what it will mean for our jobs, but to see how it's actually affecting writing in real brands, it is really useful. If the listener, who's likely a B2B writer or a B2B marketer, wants to either take some first steps with AI, get feel for what's happening, or maybe, you know, see how it works in practice, what would be a good thing for them to do?
I think for the first thing is to understand, is AI something that's relevant for you? I think if you're a copywriter who's maybe working in a corporate communications team, spending most of their time working on quarterly reports for a large corporation, where the content tends to get pored over by hundreds of eyes as it goes through all the processes, then typically AI won't help you very much. Where I think AI will help you, and where I would encourage people to look at products like Acrylinks, would be where there is a need, an awareness in the organization that content is an important driver for the business, and that everything that we need better content in order to drive the business forward. And the second thing I think you need to look for is the pressure to move faster. So what we typically see in the organizations we work with is this drive that we characterize as the, you know, the need for better content faster. If you're in a situation where, you know, you're doing the same thing you've been doing, you're writing your blogs, you write, you know, one blog a month or one blog a week, you know, you pass that to your customer and client, and they print it, they publish it, then it's unlikely that AI will be able to really get its teeth into what you do. If you're part of a larger team that's really driving the business with your content, and you're under pressure to move ever faster, then I think AI can definitely play a role in making your life better.
Andrew, that's fabulous. Thank you so much for your time. And is there a web address that that people should go to if they want to find out more about what you do?
Acrolinks.com would be a good place to start.
Great. Well, and we'll put a link in the show notes. Thank you ever so much.
Thank you very much. Nice to talk to you.
Thanks again to Andrew for sharing his time and wisdom with us. Fiona, having listened to the discussion, are you reassured that AI is going to help copywriters like us? Or is it the thin end of a wedge or what?
Well, I have to say that of all the things that have ever kept me awake at night to do with copywriting and what we do for a living, being replaced by AI has never been one of them.
You're not a fan of Terminator.
So I never really thought that, you know, the kind of job that we do would ever be replaced by AI. And having listened to that discussion with Andrew, I'm actually quite pleased that some of the things that AI is able to do now could take away some of the less pleasant parts of our job. So I'm actually reassured, yes.
Oh, cool. So which are the bits in particular that you're like, bring it on, AI, do that for me?
Well, things like swallowing the client's style guide. For a start.
Yes.
And, you know, in the same way that Word tries to tell you when you're making some kind of grammar error, if something pops up and says, no, your client doesn't like N dashes, they want an M dash here, then, you know, that would be really useful to me. Or, you know, even things like, I mean, I don't think Acrolinks is here yet, but, you know, last time you wrote this in something for your client, they didn't like that phrase. So, you know, don't use it again. You know, all that kind of thing is the kind of thing that I'd be very happy for a machine to take away from me.
Yeah, it would have to be good at it, though, because I was thinking about the blue squiggly line that Microsoft Word puts in when it doesn't like what something that you've written.
Yeah.
And I disagree with it regularly.
Oh, yeah, me too, yes.
But I must admit, just because it's there and it's annoying me, I end up sometimes, I must confess, just acquiescing just for a quiet life because I'm getting nagged by Word.
Yeah, and I think style guides are a thing because, you know, we've got clients with like 162-page style guides. Mm-hmm. And in the past, it's been someone's job to read through those and familiarise themselves with it and then review other people's work. If an AI is going to do that, I mean, it more made me worry about proofreaders, to be honest, than copywriters listening to what Andrew had to say. So I think we've got Lorraine coming onto the podcast.
Yes.
At some point soon. We can maybe ask her about her feelings about AI.
Yeah, I think Lorraine's joining us in the autumn to talk about a bit more about proofreading. So we can certainly ask about that. I guess it is some of that more nuanced stuff, you know, around what's a rule and what's a guideline, I guess.
Yeah, and it was interesting to hear Andrew talking about how, you know, the Acrolinks engine can look at, you know, is this lively? You know, is it written in the client's voice? Is the kind of emotional connection there? Because that's really interesting. You know, I'd really like to see that in action, actually.
Yeah, in the kind of, you just, I don't understand how a computer that can't read can do that.
Yeah, or how does it know who you're making a connection with and what will constitute an emotional connection with them? So that's interesting, yes.
Yeah, I mean, is that thing where what worries me is where Andrew's saying that AI can't tell you whether something is funny or fresh or interesting. And in a sense, that is reassuring. But also, I kind of wonder, is there a risk that because the computer can't score those things, that marketers will maybe view them as less important? Because it's always, you always say, you know, what you measure is what you get.
Yeah.
And so if the computer can't rank something as funny and fresh, will it over time begin to feel less important?
That's going to depend on the marketer, isn't it? I mean, there are marketers out there who really value, you know, really creative, fresh, original, witty, quirky, you know, really creative work. And those are not the types of marketers that are going to, like, just look at a score that a machine has spat out. They're going to be the ones that are looking at the work and thinking, yeah, this is really good, this is different, this is fresh. And there probably are marketers out there that will, you know, just look at the score and come back and say, no, look, can you just make it more like this, not kind of judge it on its own merits. You know, you can't lump all marketers in together, I don't think.
No, true. Although I think there's the environment around the marketer, isn't there, as well? And I think that, you know, what you see with a lot of kind of MarTech platforms is that, you know, there's the money, there's the investment behind the MarTech platform, and they'll go and speak to the C-suite and the marketer's boss and their boss and say, ah, when you've got our magic marketing automation, you'll be able to do this and this and this and this and this. It's the stuff Maureen Blanford talks about a lot.
Yeah.
And what worries me is that if the AI starts making big claims about what it can do, or, you know, it starts talking up the importance of the things that it can measure at the expense of the things that it can't, because it doesn't want you to think about the things that it can't, can that then end up with marketers being put under pressure from on high not to worry about what's fresh or interesting or challenges the guidelines too much?
Yeah, but in the same way that we see that today already. Mm. So, you know, there are marketers that are focused on the data and there are marketers that are focused on the creative. And so it's probably just more of an evolution along those lines, but I can't see all marketers going in that direction.
Phew, yeah. That's good. And, and particularly, that's what, for me, it's particularly refreshing where you've got people like Andrew coming and talking to us and telling us quite openly, you know, what the platform cannot do. That, I'm, you know, very refreshed about that. Are there bits of the job that you wish the AI could do that there's no sign of it being able to do at the moment?
That it's not able to do at the moment. I mean, the thing, I mean, we just before we went on air, if you like, we were just talking about, you know, that there's some engines that can write subject lines, for example, and write subject lines that are more effective than human written subject lines. And to me, because the kind of writer that I am is, I'm a sort of explainer, like a sort of long form content writer. I'm not so great on snappy headlines, snappy titles for things. So I was thinking, oh, well, you know, if I could write all like long form parts and then the AI could look at it and come up with a snappy title and some snappy subheaders, that'd be great. That'd be a perfect partnership for me. So I quite like that idea. I don't know if that means that I'm just going to be very, very gradually eased out. But I don't. I'm pretty sure that at the moment an AI can't come up with a very coherent long-form narrative argument piece. I think they can go off the rails quite quickly.
Yes, yeah, and you do see that, don't you? I think the thing with the subject lines, the two words that scare me, is they always say it can do this at scale.
At scale, yeah.
And particularly when you're talking about email marketing, I don't want anything to be at scale. I get too many emails as it is. And they're not, they're just, they can't be effective. And these people keep sending me tens of thousands of emails that I will never read.
Yeah, but we got a GDPR now.
It hasn't changed anything.
Has it not?
No, GDPR, I get just as many emails as I ever did, except now all the websites I want to look at, I have to click on something saying, yes, I want to accept your stuff before I look at it, anything. It's GDPR has made my online life worse on balance.
Right. Okay. Well,
we're off topic.
We're off topic. I think it's made my inbox much, much lighter and nicer. So,
cool. I think I just subscribe to sort of people that don't care.
You're just, you just signed up for all the spam. Yeah. Genuine spam.
It's true. It's true. I mean, one of the things that it's those blurred edges. One of the things that worried me, I mean, I was reading a transcript of a podcast interview with Parry Malm from Frasey, with Molly Prosser, who's associate creative director at eBay, and you know they use some of this AI, and she said that you know what I don't want to be doing is thinking about looking at two words and thinking about which one's more engaging, or working out how to say something that sounds urgently without cliche. And that's just meaningless work that copywriters don't need to be doing. I'm thinking, no, that is the job.
That is the job. Well, that was the job. You know, maybe this is going to change the job. You know, because I was, you know, listening to your interview with Andrew, and I was thinking, well, you know, what the AI doesn't seem to be able to do is sort of consult with the client and sort of brainstorm and discuss content ideas with the client and come up with, you know, this would be a great way of communicating this theme, or you know, we should use this format to do this. And maybe, you know, the job of the writer is going to become more of that consultative person rather than someone who just takes a brief and write something to the brief.
So consultant writer could be more of a job title that we see in the future.
That may be. A job title that we see in the future. It's very prescient of you, David.
Yes, I wonder. So if the job's changing, is there a new set of skills that we need to that we will need to learn, do you think? You know, will it be more about how to use the AI well to kind of, you know, help you focus on things? Or is it more about consultation? Or
yeah, well, I mean, I guess you know, we'll have to learn to use the AI, I guess. But I imagine, I mean, I've never used any of these tools. I haven't even used the Fresh Kincaid, which I know some of the people here use. But I imagine that these tools make themselves quite easy to use. So, you know, I can't imagine it's going to be a huge part of the job mastering the tools, if you like. So I think what it will change is that we'll need to double down on the thinking side of things, on the creative side of things, on the consultancy, as we've talked about, you know, working with the client to come up with the best solution to sort of communicate this story or this concept or this idea. And just, I guess, spending more time, yeah, thinking and coming up with the copy, with the content that reflects that thinking.
Wow. It's like the thing that we've been writing all of this time in B2B tech for all of the other sectors about, you know, don't be afraid. This will enable you to focus on the more strategic things.
Exactly. Yes. And now we have to eat our own dog food.
They're coming for us.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah. But, you know, I feel less worried about this than I did, for example, about, you know, when content mills started to be a thing, you know, and you could go out and get a blog post for a fiver written by a human being. And I thought, you know, maybe this is the end for us, because maybe people won't be able to tell the difference in quality between a blog post that's been written for a fiver and a blog post that's been written for 500 quid. But, you know, that has not come true. That's not come to pass.
Thankfully, really, really do know the difference.
Yeah, exactly.
And I am afraid we are out of time. If you have any comments or thoughts on this episode, please do email us at podcast@radix-communications.com, or send us a voice memo and tell us whether the robots have come for you yet, or find us on Twitter @radixcom. I should say it actually does amuse me somewhat that given the publication date of this podcast, a certain number of our listeners will be listening on the 29th of August, which is the anniversary of the day that Skynet gained self-awareness. You can find more of our stuff online and sign up for monthly copywriting tips at radix-communications.com/insights. Until next time, or should I say, hasta la vista, baby.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.